Welcome to today's podcast episode, where I'm joined by Pedro Santos, the head of e-commerce at MC Soné, a leader in Portuguese retail. Our conversation explores the transformative trends in e-commerce and Q-commerce within the diverse retail formats operated by MC Soné, from large hypermarkets to convenience stores. Pedro sheds light on the omnichannel business model that has positioned MC Soné as a frontrunner in retail, effectively integrating e-commerce with physical store operations to enhance customer experience and loyalty. Pedro discusses the evolution of e-commerce, particularly in the grocery sector, highlighting the challenges and significant growth potential given the current digital penetration rates. We've also discussed the strategic importance of customer engagement through MC Soné's highly successful loyalty program, which covers a vast majority of Portuguese households. This initiative not only deepens customer relationship, but also integrates seamlessly with both online and offline shopping experiences, boosting customer retention and satisfaction. Join us to gain valuable insights from Pedro on navigating the complexities of modern retail and the innovative strategies MC Soné employs to stay ahead in the competitive digital marketplace. So let's get started. Welcome to the Ecom Pulse, your heartbeat to the world of e-commerce. I'm your host, Eitan Kotter. Join us as we meet with industry leaders, marketing experts, and the innovative minds behind the tech that is shaping the e-commerce future. So plug in, gear up, and get ready for a pulse-pounding journey into the heart of e-commerce. Pedro, hi, how are you?
Very good. Thank you very much for having me. Excited to be here.
Yes, thank you very much for your time. How is Portugal these days?
Well, it's rainy, It shouldn't be.
What happened? It should be sunny already, no?
It should be. So spring has come, but there's probably a storm passing by and okay. The weather is really lousy. So waiting for summer.
Yes. I think it's, this time of the year.
It is. But nevertheless, if you consider e-commerce, rain and bad weather, even for Q-commerce, is something which is frequently very interesting. So
yeah.
considering the business side of it, it's good weather.
Yes. So Pedro, I know you are with MC Soné. So just for our listeners, let's put things into some context. Tell us about MC Soné and about your role.
Of course. First of all, I'm the head of e-commerce of MC Soné. We're the leaders in retail in Portugal, in mostly grocery retail. So we have all the formats from hypermarkets, supermarkets, convenience stores, franchise, several adjacent formats, such as stationery, homeware, for instance, or pet care. We're also the clear leaders in e-commerce, with a very high penetration. And we're mostly an omni-channel business. We operate e-commerce and Q-commerce. And in fact, if you look at our formats, we serve our value proposition, so it's complementary and all shopping missions, from large hypermarkets serving stock up and oriented purchase shopping missions up to Q-commerce for instant purchases, late urgency shopping missions. So we cover it all. And regarding my role, I'm the lead e-commerce and Q-commerce. So adding up a convenience layer onto this value proposition of the old business. So in a nutshell, this is the kind of role and the kind of job that I perform.
Yeah. Tell us more about the Portugal market in terms of digitization, digital commerce, e-commerce. What are the penetration rates? How the ecosystem looks like?
Well, penetration, as everywhere, e-commerce penetration and digital penetration, which are different things, have been increasing. We have been converging with other European countries. Nevertheless, e-commerce penetration and specifically in grocery penetration is still quite low. It's a low one-digit penetration. So there's a lot of room for improvement, a lot of initiatives to be taken and a long path to But of course, as everywhere, the pandemic accelerated the business. If I look at the business today and compare it to the business in 2019, I would say it's threefold. So the business has been accelerating. In fact, the history of e-commerce and grocery e-commerce in particular, I've been through other e-commerce experiences in the past, but for grocery e-commerce, we were growing at double digit. So we had the first years. We launched our e-commerce business in 23 years ago in 2001. So it's a long living business. And we grew a lot, but then we were growing single digit. And then since probably 2015, growing double digit and accelerating. And then in 2020, that huge e-commerce accelerator happened, and we had to use our assets to serve our customers. And our main goals were of course protecting our colleagues, our customers, and using that lever to deliver food to our customers and to serve our customers. So we took over to this chance to increase the business and to add this to work more on this omnichannel value proposition. Nowadays, we see that most of our customers, more than 9 out of 10 customers, buy on and offline. We do see that customer development as the main lever of these developments. It's all about engaging with customers, about increasing share of wallet, and relating more deeply with our customers. So we have been using this lever to increase the business, to increase our penetration, knowing that and proving that when you have more channels, when you start engaging with your customers with in a different channel, your share of wallet increases, so your loyalty, your customers' loyalty increase. So that's the main goal and the main driver of the e-commerce business development. And going back to the market has been increasing more or less the same way, its penetration. So we're converging with European countries, still lagging behind, but of course converging. So perhaps one day we can achieve the kind of penetration rates that you'll find in the UK or in South Korea, but still far from that.
Yes, but right now you are in a scenario where there is a substantial growth, also compared to other countries. What are the pains that you need to overcome, and what are the challenges in maintaining this growth?
Well, there are several challenges, several buckets of challenges. Yeah. The first one is, of course, getting customers to use the service, and it's about adoption. It's not about first trial, because lots of customers tried the services during the pandemic. Then customers, most of the customers or some of the customers went back to the stores exclusively. Then in a second moment, customers, started using e-commerce again. And it really fits mixing and mingling e-commerce with physical shopping. This bucket comes to a moment in which customer journeys are very complex, in which you're used to buying online and returning offline, for instance, and then calling the contact center, which is a distant customer service. And these customer journeys have become more and more complex. But in fact, you end up increasing your engagement to the customer. So it's an omni-channel bucket. And this one is about adoption. And so it's about getting, of course, new customers, but regaining the customers that tried your service during the pandemic, making your customers, increasing the adoption and making your customers more loyal, and increasing this relationship. Then this one is a traditional bucket. Then there's a second one that I guess it's the bucket that has been relating to you via physical, typically via physical e-commerce and Q-commerce, and has been migrating some of the physical purchases to e-commerce and some of the e-commerce purchases to Q-commerce, and then you serve all these shopping missions. And so for these buckets and for grocery commerce in specific, you have the challenge of capacity and variable capacity. How can you serve your customers in an efficient way? How can you deliver the value proposition with quality, with on-time deliveries, with in-full orders? So it's a lot of a logistics challenge that you have to continue using to deliver that adoption. On the other end, for grocery commerce in special, there's the huge challenge of sorting out economics. Grocery commerce is a very difficult business from an economic standpoint. You have to find the economic model that fits this challenge. And from where I stand, it's all about customer development. About developing the customer, about increasing share of wallet, about keeping your best customers, serving them well, and having the stronger value proposition that will drive the top line, the market share, and of course, having a better relationship and a positive relationship with your customers.
Yes. Pedro, you mentioned a few times the term Q-commerce, right? You want to explain what you mean here?
Yes, of course. In Q-commerce, it's about ordering your groceries and having them delivered in, I would say, up to 30 minutes.
30 minutes, so, wow.
And we started this journey. We knew that this kind of shopping mission increased a lot during the pandemic. These players scaled up their operations a lot during the pandemic. And, well, some of them are still in the market, some are not. There's a lot of consolidation in this kind of market. It's probably a platform market in which not a winner takes all, but the winner takes most of it. And we have been partnering with, well, almost every player operating in Portugal since 2019. The beginning of 2019, several of these platforms entered Portugal, and it became clear to us that besides restaurants, it would be a good idea to serve these customers, and customers were trialing and trying these services. And for groceries, it seemed to be a good idea to serve these late urgency shopping missions, as I was saying, when you forget your olive oil and you're starting to cook dinner, or if you need some kind of treat after dinner, like ice cream. So good idea to have this kind of service. So we partnered with the major players in Portugal, and we trialed some others, and we have nowadays a strong partnership with both Uber Eats and Glovo, and we also launched our own solution. So it's customers are not are probably not the same. What they're seeing is that you're a customer of one platform, two platforms, not from everybody. And so we do have this kind of solution so that we can serve these instant deliveries, these late urgency shopping missions, and cover all the relationship with our customers. This is the kind of business that has been increasing significantly, not only in Portugal, but in the rest of the world, but still gaining share. And it's a good idea for customers. It's a strong value proposition for
it's very
customers.
Strong value proposition. It's obviously an area of substantial growth for you guys, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. It's yeah. something that it's a business with very different dynamics. So the kind of assortment that you expect to have, it's different. So you yes. probably yes. need the kind of ice cream, but probably not the broom. That's not something which is urgent. Yeah. Or so it's a business with different dynamics, with a different promotional, I would say, also dynamics. So it's different, but it really complements a lot the physical and the e-commerce. So it's something that makes sense altogether.
So this is this service, like the 30-minute delivery, is something that is available in any checkout that consumers are doing? Is they can select that on the checkout phase?
No, not really. It's something that you access via the platforms, Uber Eats or Glovo, or you have our app.
Directly from the delivery platform.
Yeah. Yes, yes. Okay. Well, we have our own app, which is called Kiko Continent, and you can order using this app, and in 30 minutes you'll get your delivery then. So
yes,
typically, as I was saying, the dynamics are also different because the shopping carts, the shopping baskets are smaller, and the kind of products you buy are different. You're probably wondering what is the most sold product. It's banana.
Bananas. Wow, really?
So, because I mentioned this because I was thinking on salt or olive oil or ice cream, but in fact,
ice cream, banana. Right? Yeah. Wow. Wow. Portuguese people are very healthy, a lot of energy, right?
No, not that.
So, I mean, this is a great example of a partnership, right? That you've developed in order to provide the more services to consumers. And I know you've been quite active in other partnerships as well, right? With gyms, with gas stations, with Pizza Hut. Tell us more about these partnerships initiatives.
Well, even with these partners, we have a loyalty program, a very successful loyalty program, the most successful in Portugal. We cover more than 80% of Portuguese population of Portuguese households. We have more than 4 million households, and in Portugal there are 4.6 million, something like that, 4.7. Yeah. So it's a very high penetration. It's the kind of loyalty program that you get euros, not points, or so. And you every purchase you make on your we do have general coupons, personalized coupons. We have 10% out of everything or 15% out of everything on your loyalty card, or a 20% discount or 10% discount or whatever discount on some specific product, which is typically personalized. Mine would be different from yours. Well, of course, yours, you're elsewhere. But if you live there, as a lot of Israelis, you would have the kind of personalized discounts according to your profile, your previous purchases, using a lot of advanced analytics and to perform this kind of personalization. And we do have this in large partnership with other players. So you would get this kind of discounts and you would be integrated in this ecosystem with not only supermarkets, hypermarkets, and all the other banners that we manage, but also with fuel. So you can get discounts on your fuel and back on restaurants. If you go to, I'm not advertising, but if you go to Pizza Hut, you can get a coupon for Pizza Hut or a coupon to buy groceries afterwards. So it's the kind of ecosystem focused on adding value to the customer, adding, of course, value to ourselves and to our partners. So it's something which is very, very interesting. And even if you look at the purchase penetration on sales, it's very, very high. And we were discussing Q-commerce and partnerships with with our partners. And we're also integrating this loyalty program on this partner so that we can personalize the offer, so that we can add value, so that you as a customer, you Eitan as a customer, can choose whatever channel you want to relate with Continente. You'll get the same, well, you'll get the benefits you need, you'll get everything. So it's win-win-win solution that we're very proud of and that we believe that really adds value on the development of the customers and of retail in Portugal.
Sure. I think you're doing a very, very good job with this loyalty program. It's not just saying, okay, hey, we have a loyalty program. You actually segment the consumers.
Yes. Yes.
So different behaviors, different, you know, past purchases, making some smarter decisions about segmentation based on data and analytics. And then you are proposing something which is more personalized, right? So this is like really the right way to do things. And I assume that the majority of the purchases are from as part of these loyalty programs, right?
The large part of the purchases are made using this loyalty program. So something which is we're not only proud of, but it's the a strategic pillar of our value proposition of our business, and the probably the main lever we have for customer development. It's a way of knowing your customer and generating some kind of flywheel in which you know the customer, you personalize your offer. You can use on offline in our stores, in our partners. So you end up creating a database ecosystem, adding value to everybody. And retail should be about solving customer problems, solving customers' problems, solving and overcoming these business challenges, working together with partners, always adding value and generating this kind of flywheel that ends up generating additional value from time to time to everybody.
So you mentioned the flywheel, and flywheel obviously works very well when you know and you have clarity what's going on, right? So you have the online commerce website, you have the offline branches, it's a big network in Portugal. You also have the partnerships, and every multi-channel or every channel or every ecosystem has a different characteristics probably and different things you need to analyze. How do you get like an overview, or how do you understand, you know, what's going on? What are the tools or the data tools or the analytics platform that you use to help you get some clarity of what's going on in any of those channels and overall holistically for everything together?
First of all, we do have a test and learn approach to almost everything. And on the one end, on the other end, a data-driven mindset. If you put this all together and include a talented team or several talented teams, and with a very, I would say that the enabler is a very strong drive to the customer and to add value, understanding that, as I was saying, retail should be about adding value to the customer, and that really generates that flywheel. So this is the kind of ingredients that we put all together so that we can understand the context, understand the business, and then drive the business using this kind of information so that we can improve from time to time, always performing the best value. And this, of course, generates the strong results that we are having.
Yes, yes. I would like to put some more focus on the omnichannel strategies that you have, right? Because what I see, you know, from our experience and all the guests, I mean, I see a few approaches to omnichannel, right? So I see one example where retailers understand that there are customers that always buy offline, right? So, and they want to, you know, leverage the relationship with their offline customers, dedicated loyalty programs, you know, increase the order values. This is one effort. The other effort is online. People will always want to buy online. So they look at it like a two different silos. They have like no incentive to try to leverage any of those, like, but you know, buy now, pay in store or pick up in store. Those things are really not interesting for this type of retailers. Where are you in this? I mean, are you trying to leverage? Are you trying to incentivize people to go online or vice versa? Or it's not that interesting for you?
That's a very, very interesting question because if you look at the business from a customer standpoint, customers have been doing omnichannel and unified commerce and whatever you call it for since forever. So
yeah.
That's the kind of concept that retailers have been inventing a buzzword to describe that. But me or you as a customer, as customers, we've been doing omnichannel since forever. So when I relate to Continente, I don't really care if I'm buying online, if I'm clicking and collect, or if I'm going to a store. And in fact, the context, technology have been favoring this kind of view because every time I buy online, I click and collect. I collect in one store. The typical behavior is that, well, we know that one out of four customers that collects in a store buys something else when he or she visits the store. Uh-huh. So that makes you have an integrated value proposition. You have to have a lot of discussions and decisions on assortment, on price. What kind of pricing should I have if customers buy online and then go to a store, collect, and, well, you cannot reach a store to collect your order and the shampoo you bought for $2.99 is right in front of you at $2.95 or at $3.05. It's not consistent. So to do this, you really have to take difficult discussions and decisions. But that's probably the way. If you want to be omnichannel, if you want to relate to a customers and adopt a customer-centric relationship, this is the kind of discussions that you may have. The way we do this, it's not only focusing on the customer and assuming that channels or tools are instrumental to perform this mission of serving the customers. The baseline for this is the loyalty program, the focus on the customer, and this is in fact what guarantees that you have you're consistent. Nevertheless, I'm saying this, but this is better said than done. When you're walking the talk of omnichannel, we, as everybody, are still far from the customer view. So we have room to improve. We have been doing a lot of work, focusing a lot on the customer, but you or me as customers can still find some pain points that we have to tackle. And this is about looking at the customer journey, knowing which are the pain points that you have to sort out, but also the magic moments that you want to them to stand out. So it's about managing the customer journey and working on the specific pain points and magic moments that you're finding with a clear view on the customer. And this the loyalty program, of course, adds a lot to this and helps us a lot on this. But generally speaking, I think retailers are moving into more and more omnichannel, more and more seamless customer experience, but still room to improve from everybody. Sure. Ones are more advanced than others, but if you ask me, who is the perfect omnichannel? Well, I wouldn't know how to answer because everybody has some kind of flaws.
Trying at least, right? Yeah. Still trying to figure out the best way. So how do you analyze, you know, consumer sentiment? Or are you analyzing reviews and customer support? Are you creating surveys?
Of course.
How do you know? Yeah.
Well, we do have this traditional way of analyzing customer sentiment, for instance, which is the traditional tools such as surveys, focus groups, mm-hmm. and so on.
Yep.
We do have, we do measure NPS and NPS comments, and we analyze all of this using advanced analytic tools that for sentiment analysis, for instance, and mm-hmm. using the more advanced tools, and also, of course, trialing and trying to understand how this works in this AI, Gen AI world that we're starting to live in.
Mm-hmm.
We do have tested other more advanced methodologies, such as neuroscience tools to evaluate the way your brain reacts to more difficult or more easy tasks, with an assumption that if your brain has to work more, if the electrical impulses of your brain are higher, you're performing something which is more difficult. So we should try to make customers' life easier. But of course, all of this, listening to the customers, is also a very, complementary way to evaluate this by using analytics and advanced analytics and figures that you look at. And, the numbers sometimes say something else, frequently say something else. So, we end up mixing all the customer listening tools, more traditional and more advanced, with analytics, so that we can define the right hypothesis that we'd like to test and learn more about our customers, and then decide and discuss, and I would say adjust and adapt the value proposition to serve this customers.
It's an ongoing experimentation, right?
It is.
Ongoing. This is what's interesting in our business, I think, right? So we always try to new things.
Of course, customers are complex, and all of us, we're all customers, so we're complex beings.
Social creatures. We're all driven by our instincts, right? You mentioned neuroscience. I mean, touching our reptilian brains, not prefrontal cortex. I mean, it's too much, taking too much energy.
And
not waste energy, right? Pedro, I want to talk to you about the advertising part, specifically retail media. As you know, in the US, for example, and other parts, because of the cookie-less world, you know, Apple and now Chrome and Google is going to shut down all pixels and cookies, and brands or advertisers are looking for these first-party data, right, that obviously retailers can provide. How do you see this as an opportunity, and are you doing anything on that specific area?
Okay. First of all, I've mentioned the one of the challenges of specifically of grocery e-commerce, which is economics. We understand that to sort out these economics on top of a viable and good economic model, mm-hmm. you do need to work on your sales mix, on additional revenues, and the third component would be operational efficiencies. And these additional revenues have been performing a major part in this let's call it P&L management. And retail media became a very important revenue stream for retailers. And mm-hmm. we've seen lots of retailers within this ecosystem building very professional retail media networks. And this is the kind of effort that we're also performing. We launched our retail media business in the beginning of the year. Before we did have brought a retail media business in which we sold advertising to some of our partners. And now we're more into ad tech, more on a programmatic. Sure. Yep. So, For this retail media to work, retailers have the kind of data, the kind of information that allows them to personalize much more than segment. It's really personalized. the kind of media, the kind of advertising that you're showing your customers or your viewers, your users. This is the kind of leverage that retailers do have.
Sure.
And if you look of our side, from our standpoint, I mentioned the loyalty program and the kind of information we gather from our visitors, from our customers. And this is the kind of advantage that you may have to really personalize, to have very, very performant audiences. So this is the kind, first of all, it's a very important lever for achieving stronger economics, which is very important for specifically for grocery commerce. And on the other hand, retailers do have very, very good and information on the kind of the users, the visitors, the customers, which allows them to have a more tailored offer. So this is the kind of business that integrates very well with the grocery commerce business.
Sure. So obviously you are implementing this definitely on the online side of the business, but also on the offline side, like with digital shelves, digital screens.
Absolutely.
This
in fact, it's something that reinforces the omnichannel concept. Yes, it's something that we are working at the moment on and offline. Nice.
So Pedro, why you are so passionate about the business? Why you wake up in the morning with so much energy? What do you like in the day-to-day life of what you're doing?
First of all, I'm very passionate about digital and about retail and blending all together. And to do this, you have to be very passionate about customer, surprising your customer, about the delivering novelty every day. A third component, I'm very, I would say, addicted to challenges, and the grocery commerce challenge, it's probably one of the biggest that I see in today's retail world. So it's very interesting.
Obviously, in a scale of millions of shoppers, right? So
absolutely,
the impact is substantial. Yeah. And what are the things that you are proud of in your career, Pedro?
Well, to be honest, one of the things, my going a little bit back in the beginning of my life, I started working in e-commerce a long time ago in 2000, and my first role in e-commerce was closing an e-commerce business. In which I was probably successful, and somebody challenged me to then develop an e-commerce business from scratch, which is one of the biggest Portuguese e-commerce businesses today. Then I went to operations and logistics for a long time, and then back to e-commerce through operations and logistics. And one thing that I think not only me, but the team is very proud is being able to scale up the business during the pandemic. And probably this kind of experience of more digital e-commerce experience and the logistics and operations experience was something that were a major advantage for me.
Yeah.
And building or scaling up the business that fast during that difficult moments in which all of the assumptions that we have, the way you train people to pick and pack, for instance, the way you train your drivers, the kind of vans you use for delivering to your customers, the kind of stocks algorithms that you have, the value proposition. You have to rebuild everything very fast, scaling up the operations up to 12 times in a moment in which you have very strict restrictions on people being together, for instance.
Yeah.
I was mentioning training, but training, training with a more experienced colleague, or indoor in a training in a meeting room became impossible. So all of that adjustments and adaptations that we made was something that make us proud, and that served to strengthen our market share, our positioning. So it's something that we're all proud of.
Yes, I mean, that crazy growth during the pandemic was quite a period.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
I wish I could spend 1 week with you guys, you know, to see what's going on. You know?
Well, you could speak not with, because people had to be separated.
Yeah, just from a distance, right? Yeah, it's even to make things even more challenging. Okay, and Pedro, this is the part of the episode when I ask you about a fun fact about yourself that most of the people are not aware about you.
Well, I don't know if most people are not aware of that, but I'm addicted to challenges. I love stuff that I'm not sure that I can achieve.
Okay.
So I'm quite into extreme sports.
Really?
I like to run marathons, ultra marathons. Wow. I like climbing, peak climbing. In fact, I like stuff that I don't know. I'm not sure that I will be able to achieve. And that's probably why grocery commerce is a good business for me.
You're in the right place, right? Why do you think you have that addiction?
I don't know. It's something that you start small. You probably start understanding that you can get further, that you can overcome things that you never thought it would be possible. And this, in fact, strengthens my conviction that that people can do almost anything. And if we stretch ourselves, we can achieve lots of things that we thought it would be impossible for any of us. So we can play a major part in this world. So that's something that
of
really
course.
Motivates me and makes me. Makes me want to do more things and to try more things. Yeah. So that's it.
Of course. I mean, and again, thank you for sharing that. As individuals, we are probably not the strongest, you know, in nature. There are probably others who are much more powerful than us, right? And smaller than us and can survive in a remote island. But as a group, I mean, no one can beat humans, right? This is where
Absolutely.
Our strength is. Yeah.
And nowadays that we're developing this marvelous capacity to foresee the future and act upon the future. It's a very interesting moment.
Yes. Good use of our imagination, right?
Absolutely.
Great. Pedro, anything else you want to add?
Yeah, I guess that's it. Very, very happy to be here. And thank you very, very much for having me. It was a great moment.
Yes, I really appreciate your time and everything that you do. Wish you all the best for 2024 and great success.
You too, Eitan. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us on this episode. Your support means the world to us. If today's episode has been insightful for you, consider sharing it with someone who would also benefit. Even one share can make a big difference. Looking to elevate your e-commerce game? Discover Vimi, a multi-channel e-commerce platform that will transform your business with the power of shoppable video. Visit us at vimi.net to learn more. It's Vimi, V-I-M-M-I.net. Thank you for being part of our journey. Stay tuned for more invaluable insights in our next episode.